The following is brought to you in part by MFC Studios. The views of the show's host and guests do not necessarily reflect those of the management, owners, or staff of this radio station. And now, it came from the radio.
Welcome once again to It Came From The Radio, the official The Big Apple Con. This is your host, Mark Torres, speaking. We are here live in front of a live studio audience. At the East Meadow Public Library for our 79th live show. And I'm here with my co-host, Hellman Jenny Feldy.
Howdy doody, welcome.
And we have our special guest we're going to be talking to with and about, which is awesome because he's right here, stand-up comedian Brian McKenna. So on this week's show, as I mentioned, we're going to be talking to Brian in just a little bit, but before we do that, we have to take it away with the news.
It's morphin' time!
The news is brought to you in part by the fine folks at the Big Apple Con, which we are the official radio show of, celebrating over 8 years of comic book-ness and pop culture stuff. For more information, go to www.bigapplecc.com. The next convention is scheduled for November the 23rd. The show is also brought to you in part by the fine folks at sci-fi.radio. That's sci-fi for your Wi-Fi. Also want to give out shout-outs to our Patreons, of which there are Danny Grillo, award-winning director Jared Burrell, Kyle Horn, Millie Cortez, Newsday famous Dresden Media, Unchikun, Shad Rabbit Art, Yasmin Array, Rosa, and the Hurricane. If you want to have your own little shout-out, go to our website, www.itcamefromtheradio.com. There's a little button on there that takes you right to our Patreon page. Also on the It Came From The Radio website is my comic, Designated, which took 30 years to make, and it was recently performed as a radio play at the New York Comic Con, as well as at the East Meadow Public Library for the MCon. We'll be performing it again on April 21st at 1:30 p.m., so guys, make sure you go join us there. It tells the tale of two warring alien races fighting over a new discovered power source. The war finds its way to the planet Earth, and as a result, humans gain abilities. As always, we start off with the sad news. So let's see, sad news is actor Chance Perdomo also died recently from a motorcycle accident. Chance was perhaps best known for his role as Ambrose Spellman, which is Sabrina's cousin, in The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, and that of Andre Anderson in the series Gen V. Jen, are you familiar with his work?
Yes, familiar, and I just heard recently, this could be wrong, but maybe 70% of organ donors are motorcyclists. I just heard this the other day, so... You know, I guess you kind of know what you're doing if you're riding a motorcycle. I'm not saying you shouldn't know, but anyway, I'll move on. Do you have any thoughts on this person's death? Do you want to talk about someone's death?
I always like to start a live show with death.
Thank you.
Yeah, we like to do the light topics here on, you know, whatever it is, a Tuesday at 7 p.m. I actually don't know who that actor is, so I don't know. I guess I just never... Is he new?
Sabrina? Ever see Sabrina?
Sabrina? The Teenage Witch?
On Netflix.
No, I watched the good one, which was from the 90s.
Yeah,
I watched the Netflix. No, I'm good. No, I don't know who it is.
That's fair enough, but to go to your point, we always start off with the sad news because, as my co-host always said, that there's nowhere to go but up. So we start with sad and then we progress upward.
Not this co-host, yes, that's right.
So moving on, so he was 27 years old. So moving on, some more sad news. Actor Louis Gossett Jr. also died recently. As of this recording, no cause of death has been announced. In his over 60-year career, Lou has been in just about everything, crossing all genres of entertainment. I personally remember him most from the Gideon Oliver TV series. It was made for TV movies back on ABC back in the day. He was a crime-solving anthropologist, as well as the Iron Eagle series, of which there was four of them, and Lou was in all of them. He was 87. Are you familiar with Louis Gossett Jr.'s work, Brian? You're going to nod? Yes. Would you like to talk? There you go.
Yeah. Yeah, I know his work, but not for his good work. I only know his really... He did one really bad movie called Iron Eagle, which, look, none of you even reacted to. You didn't even know he made it. But it's like a spin-on Top Gun, the movie Top Gun. Mm-hmm. But he plays, like, the grizzled pilot vet who's teaching his young person whatever. It's a bad movie. But it's so bad it's good. You know what I mean? Like, it's one of those movies. That's why I actually like Louis Gossett Jr.
What about you, Jen? You familiar with Lou's work?
No, but I did recently hear that Top Gun was pushed by the CIA.
What? No, all right. Moving on. Quickly moving on. For the last bit of sad news, actor Joseph Flattery also died recently after a quote-unquote short illness. While most famous for his work on 131 episodes of SCTV from 1976 to 1984, as well as The Heckler and Happy Gilmore, 65 episodes of Maniac Mansion, 26 episodes of Police Academy the series, and 18 episodes of Freaks and Geeks, I mean Mark, remember him most as Count Floyd, which is a character he originated on SCTV and was on the completely mental misadventures of Ed Grimley. Basically, it was like a horror show host, but like a really bad horror show host, and he showed movies that weren't scary at all. And his gimmick that despite him being a vampire, he used to howl like a werewolf, which was the joke was that he has no idea what an actual vampire does. So that was part of the joke. And it was just really funny seeing whenever I used to watch the completely misadventures of Ed Grimley, the show with Martin Short, as he plays Ed Grimley, and he always loves watching Count Floyd, and his segments were just utterly ridiculous as to how bad they were. And I don't know if that was like based on something that was really happening at the time or back then as a kid, which our Katina Cronin-Swan and Charlie Stone you might allude to, but it was really enjoyable to see. Are you familiar with Count Floyd, Ryan?
No,
not familiar. Jen?
No, but the guy who died, I'm familiar with him. Okay. And he was so funny. And definitely check him out if you like crazy, wacky sketch comedy that's way more silly than SNL, SCTV. Yeah, so I don't want to get his name wrong. I'll repeat it. Joseph or Joe Flaherty. Yeah, super funny, original.
All right, so that's it for the sad news. We're going to move on to the not as sad news from the...
That's a lot of nuts!
...department. The new Godzilla King Kong sequel has held on to the number one spot in the domestic box office, pulling in an additional $31 million in ticket sales in its second week of release, beating out the new action film Monkey Man, which came in at the number two spot, making $10 million in its first week of release. For those of you keeping track, Dune Part 2 is still the highest grossing film of this year so far, making $265 million, followed by Kung Fu Panda Part 4 with $166 million, and the aforementioned Godzilla film sits at number 3 with $136 million. Those are the only three films, so once again, so far, that have broken the $100 million mark this year. Did you actually get to see Dune, Godzilla, and or Kung Fu Panda, Brian?
No, I haven't seen any of those. like, not even one of them, you know what I mean? Like, not even a minute of one of them. Do you have the numbers? There's no way to pull up the numbers for Godzilla, like the numbers in Japan, right? Mm. No? Because I feel like he kind of destroys Japan. Isn't that the whole point? I would like to see if that's the highest grossing film in that country, but... No, I haven't seen it. Have you seen it? I haven't. Yeah, do you like it?
I'm a Godzilla fan, so through and through. And, you know, it's not Shakespeare. It's a Godzilla movie. So you take it with a grain of salt as to what to see. I have not seen Dune, and I've never seen any of the Kung Fu Panda movies, so I wouldn't even bother to see the fourth one. But Godzilla's my man. He's the man.
What do you like about Godzilla? Top three things.
So when I was a kid, I used to love seeing a guy in a rubber suit destroying stuff. Like, there's just something so pure about it. Like, some wacky guy in a rubber suit. And it's like the Muppets, where you just kind of believe that it's a real thing, even though you know it's a guy in a suit or a sock puppet. Like, it's just one of those things that it just suspends the disbelief. And that's why I really enjoyed the Godzilla movies. And then when he died, in spoilers, in the 1992 one, it was emotional because Godzilla died, and then they brought him back.
Now I know why we started with the death theme. I see why he really enjoys the Godzilla destroys everything. So now it makes sense. Okay.
I said this before, but I highly recommend, if you don't speak Spanish fluently, go on the Spanish channel, get high, watch Godzilla, and then you're watching two different languages you don't understand. You can barely understand English. I did this like 20 years ago when I was in college, and I was like, I barely speak Spanish. I don't know any of the languages on my television. Wow, this is really strong. But that was 20 years ago, so we can talk about it.
So moving on, from the Holy Lawsuit Batman follow-up department. During a previous episode of our show, we reported that Chris Wozniak, who at the time was being sued by DC Comics for, quote, writing an unauthorized Batman story, unquote. Chris says, I wrote a Batman Riddler story that was used to make the $900 million film The Batman. Warner Brothers attorneys are not disputing that they used my story to make the film, even they know I can prove that. So instead of providing fair credit and compensation, they're having DC Comics sue me for writing an unauthorized Batman story. Everyone who has worked for or freelanced at DC Comics in the 90s knows that established freelancers were given free license to submit stories anytime they wanted. It's probably how 90% of DC Comics were made. And if DC Comics liked your story, they put it under contract. That was standard company practice for decades. But my Batman story is the only one that was ever used without a contract in place, and Warner Brothers knows that's a huge problem. So as anyone would, I asked to be paid for my contribution. All I asked was for to be credited and get writers received, no damages, no extras of any kind. But instead of doing what's right, Warner Brothers and DC Comics opted to fabricate a ridiculous lawsuit designed to bankrupt a single dad with a 10-year-old daughter. They even seeking legal fees, which is an estimate that could be nearly $500,000. They're demanding that I back off. I will not. Again, DC Comics is suing a freelancer for writing and submitting a Batman story 30 years ago. Suing a freelancer for simply submitting a story is completely unprecedented. It's something all freelance writers did at the time and was regularly encouraged by DC Comics. Many, many former DC writers and editors are willing to confirm this as a regularly accepted practice. Business as usual. But because Warner Brothers neglected to negotiate the rights for my story, they're trying to have DC Comics run me off rather than pay me. Now, a judge has ruled on the case. In a 45-page decision letter, the judge said that Chris, quote, intentionally and without consent, lifted material from DC Comics' works to create his story, which, quote, liberally exploits, indeed is rife with, unquote, Batman characters and plot elements. The judge also said key similarities between the works, which were our serial killers who are lonely bent on destroying society, villains who taught pursuers with, quote, unquote, clues and riddles, and moments of clarity or epiphany that propelled villains of crime who were too commonplace to support Chris's copyright claims. And finally, the lawyer rejected Wozniak's wholly speculative claim about how Warner Brothers might have gotten access to the story, as well as turned down the entire claim on its head by saying, quote, the story's use of the Batman character and surrounding protected elements is an act of clear and blatant copyright infringement. Chris Lawyer says we respectfully disagree with the court's decision and considering our next steps. So, in the old days, as they do now, they have freelancers out there who write comic books, who write stories, they submit them to get DC, to Marvel, and they get published. They decided to take one of those stories and they made a movie out of it. The points in the comic book that was written is clearly there. But now they're saying that this guy is using copyright infringing on DC's characters by using DC characters in a comic book that he submitted to be printed. Mm-hmm. That's just insane.
Yeah.
Jen?
I feel like it's like commenting on a divorce. I wasn't there. It's a little tricky. You know, there's a lot of nuance that we can't really see. But, you know, you want to get involved with some big corporation that you don't know, that you don't have any family members or nepotism with. How can you expect them to treat you well? And we're going to be finding this out with a lot of different big organizations, as we already are this year, that they can't be trusted. So, you know, take that for what it is.
I was always a Superman fan, so I don't really care.
But let me put this in perspective for you,
sure.
Brian.
Sure.
Let's say you have a comedy act, and as you know, many comedians go out there and they have TV shows,
sure,
or movies based on their act.
Yeah.
So if you did an act and somebody just made something from your act without crediting you, isn't that kind of crazy? And then they're saying that you're copyright infringing on the major company's characters. It's just mind-blowing to me. Has that ever anything happened in your world of comedy?
I mean,
Yeah, not like that. I mean, I wish I had enough money to sue someone, because I would. I'm like dying to get into a lawsuit. You know what I mean? Like, I want it so bad.
No, that's never happened to me. But
I mean, I understand why a guy's upset, because he thinks... I mean, here's the thing. Let's be honest. He's going to lose. He's not going to win that battle. You're not going to beat DC, you're not going to beat... So you're better off just going, all right, write another story. I mean, just keep writing and hope that, you know, you catch someone stealing the next thing you write. You know, because there's no way you're not going to beat DC. It's impossible. You can't beat corporations. They just, you know why? Because they bleed you dry. They'll just keep, you have to get a lawyer and postpone and postpone and postpone. And then all of a sudden, like he said, he's a single dad. He's going to be bankrupt. I go, he'll be bankrupt probably by June. You know what I'm saying? I go, that's it. So it's like, you're better off. Sure. Is it? But this is the thing. Injustices happen every single day in every business. Unfortunately, he doesn't have any leverage. It's going to be too hard to fight him. Unless it's something so blatant where, like, he's like, my Batman had one ear and this one has one ear. Like, there's no way to prove it. It's a bland story. But anyway, I mean, I hope he doesn't use me as a character witness, because I wouldn't be a good one. But
the nuance, maybe there is a little detail. And also... Maybe. Alex Jones is about to sue the CIA. So we have this guy suing Marvel. There's going to be a lot of lawsuits this year against big corporations, so stay tuned. Very interesting.
So moving on, from the sequel department, none other than Disney, under its 20th Century Studios banner, has announced a new X-Files series is in the works with director-writer Ryan Coogler in charge of the production. Ryan is best known for making the Black Panther films, as well as the very first Creed movie. Original X-Files creator Chris Carter, which has no involvement in this iteration, had this to say. I just asked Ryan what his deals were, and he told me. And I said, those sound like good ideas. It's interesting, people say. Aren't you possessive of it? And I say, no. I'm looking forward to see what somebody else does with it. No matter what he has, it's a hard job. Casting is a hard job. Mounting it is a hard job. All the problems that I dealt with are going to be his problem. For those of you who don't know, or care for that matter, the original series was about two FBI agents, one a conspiracy theorist, the other a skeptic, investigating unsolved cases involving paranormal, which ran on Fox from 1993 to 2001, only to be brought back for two more seasons in 2016. The series also spawned two movies, Fight for the Future and I Want to Believe, that came out 10 years apart. Now, what's interesting is that we, having came from the radio, have a connection to Chris Carter, which Jen does not know about.
Nope.
Back in the day, because we've been on the air for almost over 20 years now, we got contacted by Chris Carter's people to be a guest on our show. And this was early on when we were starting out, and we did not have the ability to record, to do pre-recorded interviews. It was either you call in on the station or you showed up at the station, and that's it.
Right.
So his people were like, we were only available for this day. But I had already booked another guest for that day. And so I'm like, I can't. I already have this date booked. Can you come another day? And they were like, no, he's going to be doing this because he wanted to promote the second X-Files movie. And he was like, no, we can't do it. The only way we can do it is on this particular day. And I'm like, I'm sorry. I have somebody else booked. I'm not going to kick them out.
Who did you have booked?
It was the Migos Stretch Hulk. And it was some guys who had their own little pod. It was like a video series. It wasn't in a podcast. It was like a video series of comic book sketches that they did. Okay. It was Keith Gleason, John Simono, and I forget the third guy. Sorry, guy. But they were on the show. They came down to the studio, and they were a guest. And then the movie flopped. So I kind of felt good that Chris Carter was like, no, we don't want to do any other day but that particular day. And if you don't want to do it, you know, screw you guys. And then the movie failed. So I always felt kind of good that maybe because he wasn't on our show, our little show, the movie did terrible.
And you did the right thing. You did the right thing.
Did I?
Yeah, you don't cancel. You don't cancel. Huh? Yeah. Doesn't matter if you get a bigger option. Too bad. You should have had a bigger option booked. It's just not the right thing to do.
Brian, were you a fan of X-Files?
Yeah, I just want to say, you never cancel. I mean, I was supposed to do the Tonight Show tonight, but I'm going to the East Meadow Public Library.
Thank you.
Right? So, let's keep it all in perspective, all right? I did like the X-Files, but I only watched like a few episodes, and I don't know, like one of them, like the alien was naked, so I was like, I don't know if I should be watching this. Like, it was a weird episode that I watched. Also, I'm not 100% sure it was the X-Files. I don't know. I could have been watching something else, I'm not sure. So,
I like my aliens with clothes on.
You were watching the XXX
box? I might have been watching that, yeah.
There you go.
So for the final bit of news, from the sequel department, none other than Warner Brothers has announced that a fifth Matrix movie is in development with Drew Goddard as the new writer/director, leaving the original co-creator, writer-director of the previous four films, Lana Wachowski, as just the executive producer on the project. Drew is best known for writing the original Cloverfield, World War Z, The Martian, and he wrote and directed Cabin in the Woods, the film. Executives say, Drew came to Warner Brothers with a new idea, and we all believe this would be an incredible way to continue the Matrix world by both honoring what Lana and Lily began over 25 years ago and offering a unique perspective based on his own love of the series and characters. The entire team of Warner Brothers Discovery is thrilled for Drew to be making this new Matrix film, adding to his vision to the cinematic canon the Wachowskis spent a quarter of a century building here at the studio. Of note, the last Matrix movie grossed only $37.6 million against a $190 million budget in the domestic box office, which explains why they're no longer really involved with the movie. Did you see any of the Matrix? Were you a fan? Did you see the newest one, Brian?
Yeah. The Matrix I like. I did not see the newest one, so I guess that's probably my fault. They've only made 37 million. Right, I guess. I didn't see the new one. Also, like, this is how, unfortunately, maybe you guys would agree or disagree, I don't think Hollywood is very original anymore. Mm-hmm. All we do is make sequels or some spin-off version of this other universe and this. And it's like no one comes up with any original ideas. And I think the problem with that is the internet is probably a major issue because so many people are focusing their stuff, like, the creative stuff is more going towards the internet, I feel, than this kind of writing, sitting down and writing scripts and really hammering. Because a script takes how long? I mean, you wrote a script. It took you 30 years to write that one. So it's like, you know, when's the second one coming?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? We have to wait another 35 for the second one. So it's like, that's my point is that it's, I don't like, I hate sequels after a certain point. I like maybe two, you know what I'm saying? I mean, I'll give you The Godfather 2, but come on, man. The third one, come on. It's not a good movie. So like, I don't know. It's just my... I really went on a rant here, huh? I really went off the rails here. Answer, I have seen The Matrix. I did not see the last one. Yes. There you go.
That's because we're in The Matrix, so they can both pick movies from The Matrix. You have to get out of The Matrix and you can get new storylines.
So that's it for the news, thankfully. So we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back in front of a live studio audience.
Hi, you've heard my voice open and close the show. Now we want to hear your voice. If you have a business or product, you can record a commercial here. We offer 30 and 60 second spots. For more information, contact Mark at mfc_studios@hotmail.com.
Sword of Omens, come to my hand. I, Lion-O, command it. Hi, everybody. This is Larry Kenny, the voice of Lion-O on Thundercats. And you're listening to It Came From the Radio.
Now, back to our show.
Hey, It Came From the Radio fans. It's Chris Woolsey, the king of streaming, back with another segment of Chris's picks for what is popping on Crackle this month. Well, we have got a ton of great titles for you. It's kind of a mixed bag this month, which is fun because you get a little bit of everything, as you often do with Crackle. And we've got some great titles. One of my favorite genres are war films, and specifically World War II films. But what you rarely get to see is a World War II film from the British perspective. And we've got a great title this month called Lancaster Skies. And this is about a Spitfire pilot who has to overcome his own personal terror in order to protect a Lancaster bomber. Lancasters were kind of the UK answer to the B-24 heavy bombers that the US used. And this pilot has to overcome his own personal fears in order to protect this Lancaster as it goes on its such important mission, bombing raid over Berlin in 1944. Performances are through the roof. This is a phenomenal film. Check out Lancaster Skies. I am also super excited this month. We have one of the greatest sketch comedy series of all time, and that is the Canadian classic series, The Kids in the Hall. A lot of people don't know The Kids in the Hall was actually originally aired on HBO and back in the 90s. And these guys were light years ahead of everyone else. So funny. David Foley from News Radio, Bruce McCullough from Arrested Development, Kevin McDonald from Invader Zim. Such a great series. If you're ever disappointed in the consistency or lack thereof of SNL, check out The Kids in the Hall. They are amazing. You're going to love it. Another great title we have this month is it's actually the film that I saw as a kid when I first saw Tom Cruise, and I went, who the heck is this guy? He is going to be a huge star. And that is in the buddy comedy Losin' It. Set in 1965, it's about four stupid teenagers that go down to Tijuana, Mexico, and so often the case, they get into massive trouble. Starring Tom Cruise, Jackie Earle Haley from Watchmen, great cast, John Stockwell from Top Gun. Check out Losin' It. It's very fun. It's a great 80s throwback. You definitely want to check that one out. Also, we've got a phenomenal boxing film this month, and that is Homeboy, starring Mickey Rourke. Yes, not only can he wrestle in The Wrestler, but he can also box in Homeboy, also starring Christopher Walken. And it's the great story of a down-and-out boxer who's got one last shot at redemption in the ring. It is phenomenal. You definitely want to check this one out, Homeboy on Crackle. And then another favorite. You know, I love a good disaster film. I mean, who doesn't? And we've got a fun limited disaster series. This is the series Meteor, and this is starring Billy Campbell from Star Trek Prodigy and Marla Sokolov from The Practice, and it's exactly what you think it is. There's a huge rock hurling through space, going to crush everything in its path, including the Earth, and what in the world is humanity going to do? I definitely recommend checking that out if you are a fan of the genre. It is a fun one for sure. And speaking of genres, I also love caper films, and we have a very fun one starring one of my favorite actors. I've got to say, Jesse Eisenberg is just, for my money, it doesn't get much better than him. I something about that guy I just love. And this is a crime thriller inspired by true events about a drug ring trafficking ecstasy pills to the New York club scene. And Eisenberg plays a rabbi who is involved in sort of this hoary netherworld in New York. It is a phenomenal film. Justin Bartha is also in there from The Hangover. Yeah, it's a great cast. If you like capers, I highly recommend checking out Holy Rollers. All kinds of great stuff on Crackle. You can download the Crackle app from your favorite app store, watch on your tablet, your mobile, your connected TV, and as always, everything on Crackle is free. Again, this has been Chris's Picks for what is popping on Crackle this month. Thank you. It came from the radio fans. I hope you have a phenomenal week. Bye-bye.
This is Carrie Steller from In the Girls Corner, and you're listening to It Came from the Radio.
Now, back to our show.
And welcome back to It Came from the Radio, the official of the Big Apple Comics. This is your host, Mark Torres, speaking in front of a live studio audience. At the East Metal Public Library for our 79th live show, I am here with L-Man Jenny Feldy, who just disappeared for a second, and comedian Brian McKenna. Say hi, Brian.
Oh, hello, everyone again.
So, Brian, I've only met you recently because you were kind enough to be part of my comic book reading at New York Comic Con. But is that something that you had thought about when you started to be performing in a radio play, or is that something that just kind of came and fell into your pants?
You called, you asked me, and I said yes. That's how it works.
I would have done anything. As you see, I don't turn a lot of stuff down. That's why I'm here. No, I'm kidding. You know what? Honestly, that was cool. I'd never done a play live before, so it was kind of interesting to have to read as a character live and kind of see people's reactions as I was doing it. So it wasn't something I ever thought I would do, but I was happy I did it.
So as a professional stand-up comic, is that something that was in your wheelhouse to do improv, to be in front of a live audience when you were starting out as Young Brian? Were you always Young Brian, or was it just Little Brian? What was the name back then?
The Young Brian, that's cute. What was the question?
Improv.
Improv. You're asking, do I like to improv?
Yes and yes.
Yeah, I mean, I never took like an improv class. Like, I never went to like, there's professional improv people who are like, they're amazing. If you ever go to like a live improv show, it's really something to see. They can go off on tangents that I wish I could do. But as a stand-up comic, I do enjoy talking to the crowd. A lot of my stand-up, when I do stand-up, is very, I like talking to people in the moment, because I think it's something that's, because of cell phones and stuff, we're never in the moment anymore. So those things that happen in a live show brings you back instantly into the moment. So that's why I enjoy doing it, that's why I enjoy the stand-up side of crowd work and improv.
Which perfectly leads me to my question. Why do you like talking to the public regularly? Because you kind of have to. Maybe you might sign up for a show, 6 months, and then you still have to do it. Like, why do you want to talk? What do you have to talk about? What drives you?
Probably a bad childhood. I had a good childhood. If my mother is listening. Why do I like talking to the people? It's a great question. I was kind of a funny kid. So when I was a funny kid, I was always funny with my friends. But what's funny is I wasn't even the funniest person of my friends. I have friends who are way funnier than me, considerably funnier than me. My little sister is funnier than me. But they don't do stand-up. So like when I started doing stand-up, it was very interesting because the people I knew were like, well, you're not funny. So like, you haven't said a funny thing ever. Like, what makes you think you can do? Like, it was kind of an interesting thing. I'm like, wait a minute, I think I'm. Yeah, everyone said that to me. Everyone was like, you're not the funny one. So and so's funnier than you. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know. I think I could do it. And then that was kind of how it started. That was the first thing. And then I was always kind of funny with my friends. And then that was it. Really, it's not really that interesting.
Are there any topics that you're driven to talk about?
Topics that I'm driven to talk about. No, I kind of talk about whatever is completely ridiculous in our society, and we have a lot to choose from now. It's really enjoyable. It's a really good time for comedy if you like stand-up, because the world has gotten so insane. Mm-hmm. But sometimes you can't even, the bits write themselves, because you're like, I can't even imagine. We have another election coming up. Relax, I'm not going to talk about it. I don't want to divide the room. But like, that alone is comical. You know what I mean? Like, that alone is kind of, how did we get back in the same position that we're in? Like, it's just interesting to me. But there's no real topic that I'm driven to. It's kind of whatever pops in my head about whatever's kind of going on. I do like to talk about my family, though. That's kind of fun. But that's the only thing. It's kind of my family and my immediate relationships. And also, why is CBS, why is everything locked up in CBS? That's another issue that I've been tackling lately. No? Is this Long Island have that problem?
Yes.
Yeah, you guys have that problem? I mean, Gatorade is padlocked. I don't really understand.
Really?
Yeah, they lock everything up. It makes you think, should I have been stealing from CBS? But anyway, that's another topic.
Well, I'm very passionate about the how are you. I have two or three pages written. We should have abolished how are you. It should just be hi, unless you really want to ask a question. Because it's a question, and people use it as a statement, and then they say, how are you? And they just keep walking, and I'm still answering. They're over here, but that's another day.
So when it comes to topics,
yeah.
Is there a line, and do you ever think about crossing that line?
Yeah, what's the line?
There's no line. There's absolutely. I mean, I come from a place where you can't offend me. There's nothing anyone could ever say to offend me. No joke has ever offended me. If you go to a comic club and get offended, that's like going to a library and getting offended by books. They're gonna be there. You know what I'm saying? So it's like you should. For me, there's no topic that is off limits. I've heard every topic be made fun of, and no matter what, how awful the topic, you're like, oh, you can't joke about that. I've heard it, I've heard jokes that make me laugh. So for me, there's no topic offline. I don't necessarily choose those topics to speak about, because you can do them, but you're gonna most likely anger 50% of the people that you're talking to. And to me, the idea is not necessarily to do that. The idea is to kind of bring people together versus kind of tearing us apart. So that's what I choose to do. But again, I've heard comedians who are very rough, and then the jokes are rough, and I've heard them, and they are funny. So I think there's a genre for it. If you don't like it, I just say don't listen. That's probably what I would say if you don't like those kind of topics being talked about. But to each their own. You know.
Which leads me to my next question. So very similar. What topics do you feel sort of driven to talk joke about, but you don't, because you don't feel like dealing with the repercussions, online or in person? Like, what things will you skip? Like, rape, Nazis, Hitler, KKK. I'm just going through my own set list. This is part of it.
I mean, what's not funny about Hitler? I mean, come on, guys. I don't do any sort of rape jokes. I don't do any sort of, you know, jokes like that. I mean, if there was a funny Hitler joke, I would do it. I just haven't found one.
I'll give you one.
Yeah, all right. We'll talk about it in the show. I'll absolutely do it. I have no problem. No, I stay away from anything where is sort of too taboo. It's just not... It's just, I don't try to mine for those things. I don't look for the funny in those things. I'm sure I probably could find something that's either interesting or funny within it, but I personally don't do that. But again, I've heard comedians do it, and good for them that they can pull it off. I just choose not to do comedy that way. But again, I don't think anything's off limits, so there's no limit to whatever. Like, they also, you should be able to joke about anything at a comedy club. I'm not joking about anything at a supermarket with someone. I'm not joking about anything... You know, obviously you have to be a human being when you leave the comedy club. But at the comedy club, I'm like, everything's kind of... That's why we're all here, to kind of see a ridiculous version of the world through someone else's eyes. You know, that's what I choose to do. But.
So when you're making your comedy set,
yeah,
without doing crowd work, mm-hmm. in your mind, you're anticipating a kind of reaction. Did you ever have to turn on the fly when the audience isn't with you, or do you stick to your set and just go with your guns because you're like, I know this is funny, I just have a bad audience? I bring this up because I remember I went to a comedy show in Atlantic City, and it was me and a couple of my friends, and we were like the only guys who were of a certain age, and everybody else was like of a different certain age.
Okay.
And the comedian was talking about stuff specifically for me and my friends, and we were the only ones laughing in the entire arena. And everybody else was just like dead silent. And he just kept on going for it. And we felt bad because this guy was funny to us, but he was dying in the room.
Yeah. So you're asking me if I bombed before. The answer is yes, many a nights. There was many a nights of trauma. I remember I bombed one time after the guys from 30 Rock. Not Tracy Morgan, another... the other thing, Judah Friedlander, if you don't know who he is, he's in the TV show 30 Rock. I had to go on after him one night. That was the worst night of my life. That was pretty bad. I had to just couldn't figure it out, couldn't transition. You know, sometimes when you're a comedian, you're up on stage, and if your jokes aren't working necessarily, then you got to pivot to crowd work. And if that is also not working, it's like, well, then what do you do? And then what you do is that's when you just kind of power through whatever, or say goodnight and get off the stage. I mean, depends on how much money they're paying me. If they pay me a decent amount of money, I will power through and do the exact time that they said. Like, I've had shows where they're like, you have to do 30 minutes, and I've been silent for 30 minutes, and I'm like, oh, I'm doing the 30 minutes. So no matter what's going to happen, I'm going to get to that 30, because otherwise if I don't, they won't pay you. So I'll power through. But you get a thick skin doing stand-up after a period of time. And also, it's not necessarily that people don't find you funny or even find me funny. I don't take it personal anymore. I used to take it personal in the early parts of my first couple of years of doing stand-up. I took it very personal. Like, oh, you don't think I'm funny, I'm funny. You know? But also, I realize now, like, after doing it for as long as I've been doing it, it's more a stylistic thing. It's that not everyone's going to enjoy your style. I know I have friends who don't think Kevin Hart is funny. they say, I don't think Kevin Hart is playing. And I'm like, well, he just sold out 80,000 seats at the Philadelphia Eagles Stadium. So I go, somebody, he's funny. You can say whatever you want. You may not like it, but somebody's buying tickets to go see him. So in the grand scheme of things, it's like, that's how I look at it. I think that's a healthier approach as opposed to being mad all the time. It's kind of like, all right, you just didn't buy into what I think is funny, and that's okay. Like, that's, you know, again, who was the actor you guys named that passed away?
Joe Flattery.
Joe Flattery, I'm sure somebody in this room didn't think he was funny, but he was on how many TV shows and all that stuff, and I go, he's, you know, he's obviously a funny guy, you just don't like the style, and that's okay. And like, people don't think Rodney Dangerfield was funny. You know what I'm saying? Rodney Dangerfield was funny, but you may not like that style of it. You know what I mean? Like, and if you don't like it, then that's what it is. You just kind of move on. You know?
So when you do a stand-up set, usually, you know, you're going to repeat a joke 5 times, 100 times, 200 times. What do you do when you have a show scheduled and you just really don't feel like telling maybe 1, 2, or 3 jokes for the 50th time?
What do I do?
Drugs?
What do I do? No, I don't do drugs. I would, you know, here's what's interesting. A joke is, this is very inside, so if you guys are bored, I get it. A joke for a comedian is never done. So that's what's interesting about doing it the 50th time. This happened just a couple months ago. I was telling a joke for probably about 1.5 years, and it always did well. And then one night I figured out how to do it. I figured out actually how to perform it. And it had to do with me turning my face more to the right and to the left side to make the audience understand that I was talking about 2 different things. And it got a bigger laugh, and I went, wait a minute. This was after 1.5 years of me. It always did well. I always thought the joke was doing well, but it was a matter of going left or right. You know what I mean? So it takes a while to... So when you say, like, what do you do when you don't want to tell the joke? It's like, oh, I just tell the joke the 51st time. I just kind of power through it, like you said, and I do it because, you know, that's what it is. It's a craft. It's not... people think it's like, oh, you walk out and just figure it out. You know what I mean? Oh, you just walk out. These guys look like they're just having a conversation. They're not. No one's having a conversation. There's some guys who go up and just kind of pinpoint, and like they go up with kind of an idea. There's very few of those people that are able to do that well. And the guys that do it, you know, they're great. But my point is that that's not my style. I like to craft over and over and over again. And like I said, after 1.5 years, I figured out how to tell that one joke. So, you know, maybe you guys won't come and see me. I'm not going to do it now. That's ridiculous. You haven't paid me enough, so.
What about the 500th time telling a joke?
That's assuming that I'm still wanting to do it at the 500th time. Yeah, you just do it. Why? Because you do stand-up, right? You don't like doing it? You don't like telling a joke the 50th time?
Yeah, it bores me a little bit. It's like, I've heard it. I've heard you guys laugh. Like,
yeah, but you haven't heard that audience laugh that night.
Well, I'll explain. The way I work is like, I got a bunch of A+s my whole life, you know, National Honor Society. It's like, 11th grade, you know, whatever. It's like, I was done, I got it, I know I can do it, who cares? So I basically almost failed out my senior year because I just don't care. Like, once I know I can do something, I'm like, okay, I got it, now we can move on. So that's for me. So you probably be great at marriage because you would do the same thing multiple times, thousands of times, and not get bored. So, you know, that's great.
It's great that you just brought that up because I am good at marriage because my wife just walked in into the back. So thank you for saying that, I would be good at marriage. Yes.
Yeah, see?
Honey, am I good at marriage? Yeah, there you go.
There you go. There you go.
I don't know. I mean, look, you almost failed out of high school, but look at you now.
So the one thing I've always heard about comedians is that people often assume that they have to be on all the time and be funny. See, you're rolling your eyes because you know exactly. Is that an actual thing, and how upsetting is that to hear, hey, you're a comedian, be funny right now?
I don't enjoy that aspect of it when someone's like, hey, tell me a joke. make me laugh. I mean, it would be like if someone was a teacher, and you're like, all right, sit down. Let's go over the Cuban Missile Crisis real quick. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the same sort of idea that it is. But at the same time, I understand because they're excited. Maybe they've never met a comedian before, so they're like, please, let's have this moment of where I'm, you know, kind of funny. Mm-hmm. I usually explain to them that that's not how it works, and then I say, I charge $25 for a ticket. You can come anytime. Or I'll give you a free ticket. You can come and watch me do where it's supposed to be heard. Because the way that I kind of do jokes, it's kind of, there's a lot of attitude and energy and stuff. Mm. And all that is put into the act to, there's reasons for it. So for me to tell you why I don't like X, Y, and Z, and this is the joke, I think it would fall flat. People are like, that guy's not funny. You know what I mean? Like, it's, but I don't get mad at that necessarily. But it can kind of be annoying, you know, if you get it too many times in a row. But not that many people. I don't really disclose that I'm a comedian to too many people. People ask me what I do, and I'm like, I paint. That's what I do. I'm a painter. Because that's way boring. They're like, oh, that's what I want to talk about.
Yeah, or you could paint them, right?
Yeah, I could just paint them. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't know if you've ever gotten it as a...
All the time. All the time. All the time. And the more stand-up I do, and the more movies and theatrics I do, I feel like the more boring and monotone and ugly I look in real life. Because you just, they're like, oh, I gotta get dressed up and do all this. So yeah, it just makes you a worse person in real life. For me, but I'm a weirdo. So we'll move on to the next one. A lot of stand-up comedians talk about, like, there's a high when you're on stage. I feel like, I'm just gonna answer, I bet you don't have the high as much, the calm down as much. Because I feel like it's natural for you. You're in like a balanced homeostasis state. That's just my analysis of him. That it's like he doesn't have to go here and here. But a lot of comedians do talk about having this high. And the next day, for me, I feel hungover. I don't drink alcohol. But I will feel hungover, just depleted, like I was in a windstorm. So how do you feel the next day? Do you find that there's highs and lows? Or yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I wish I had homeostasis when I drive on the Belt Parkway. And I wish I was nice and calm for that. No, I'm just portraying a nice calm. I'm not necessarily calm all the time. My wife would absolutely agree that I'm not calm. The thing is about it is, I don't get, someone told me a long time ago, somebody I work with, a guy named Jim Brewer, I don't know if you guys know who he is. He told me a long time ago, never get too high on the highs and never get too low on the lows.
Yeah.
Which is a good analogy for life also, is just kind of stay, when something good is happening, just enjoy it for it being good. But don't get like, oh, this is all, it's going to be amazing. Because then, like you said, the come down is horrible. I do so many shows in New York City and around the country that doing a show to me is sort of just another, that it's kind of like when someone's showing up to work and kind of clicking a ticket. Sure, there are better shows, but just like anyone else, you have a better day at work than you did, you know, yesterday than you did today or something like that. So it's kind of like that. That's sort of the way I look at it. It's not as exciting as you think. People think stand-up comedy is incredibly exciting. It's really, the day-to-day is very boring and meticulous, so it's not as exciting as people want it to believe.
Mm-hmm. All right. What about the enemy of the stand-up comic? Hecklers. How do you deal with hecklers?
Love them. Love them.
Do you love them?
Love them.
It depends on the heckler. It depends on my mood. Which is 100% honest. It depends on what they're yelling out. I've never really gotten many nasty hecklers. I've gotten people that like yell something out because they're excited about something I'm talking about, or they agree with what I'm talking about. I get a lot of positive heckles, which is nice. I don't really get the people who are kind of combative. How do I deal with them? I honestly just go with whatever they're saying. Or I'll ask them questions. I'll find out what's the root of the problem. Sometimes people just want attention too. Most hecklers kind of just want attention, you know. So it depends on. I tend to not go at them too hard. I mean, after the Chris Rock situation, he got slapped by his heckler Will Smith. I wish Will Smith would jump in my show and smack me. Oh God, that's the lawsuit I'm trying to get in. You know, that would be it. It would be Brian McKenna Studios after that. That's how I would have done that. No, I don't, after that, I mean, people were like, they're going to attack comedians next. I'm like, no, they're going to, Chris Rock got attacked. We're doing a show in a laundromat. No one's, what are we, getting heckled by the laundry? Like, nobody's, I don't deal with them. There's nothing, a little secret of stand-up is you never be as, whatever they say, you can only be as mean as whatever they say.
Hmm.
That's a little secret, because you can't, if someone says something like, you know, you're not funny, you can only match that energy of you're not funny. You can't all of a sudden start cursing at them, because the people are like, whoa, they didn't even mean that, you know? So it's like one of those things. That's a little secret of kind of stand-up. Very inside.
Where do the jokes come from?
Where do my jokes come from?
Mm-hmm.
God. I hope it's God. I don't know. There's a... I do believe in a... How do I say it? I don't know if it's God, but there is definitely a... What's the word of, like, an in-between?
Collective consciousness.
Collective consciousness. Sure, that's a lot of words. I can't even say that.
Is there a comedy God?
I don't know if there's a comedy God. I think that there's a muse. It's probably the best way. And I think every so often the muse touches you on the shoulder and kind of tells you, this is funny, you know. That's my personal belief. Some people are very meticulous with their joke writing. There's obviously structure. You can write structure, but that's, you know, very, again, kind of boring to me.
You ever wake up with a joke in your head?
Do I ever wake up with a joke in my head? No. Not... Sometimes I'll go to sleep with not, I'll be like, man, I think this is funny, but no one, and then I'll go to sleep, and sometimes I'll wake up and be like, oh, that's how I deliver it. That's how I say it. So it's more that. It's more like, that's where the technique comes in of stand-up. It's like kind of like, oh, that's how you do that. Okay, and this, maybe I'll say it this way this time and see if that works. That's more of what I kind of come up with. Nothing ever comes out fully formed, almost never.
One of my favorite comedians of all time, the late Norm Macdonald, he was always like, he loves stand-up,
yeah.
But he managed to find himself in multiple TV series. He has two movies out there, and in interviews, he was always like, "Oh, you know, people always come to me and be like, hey, if what's Seinfeld can do it, he's a comedian, I can do it too, but it's like a completely different mindset." Mm-hmm. And he's like, "I can't act." So is that something in your mind that you want to be, have your own television series, or why do you think some comedians can have television series and some cannot? Because I was a huge... George Wallace fan, and he had a show, and it was terrible.
Yeah. Mm.
So what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, to answer it about me quickly, which this is obviously tonight all about me. I don't think anyone deserves a television show. I think the television genre has kind of changed a little bit. Netflix kind of ruined that, I think. So giving, like, sitcoms don't work anymore for whatever reason. They just stopped kind of working. I don't necessarily want my own TV show. I'd like to be in a TV show. Here's the thing, I want to put all my focus into stand-up. It's a very specific art form that I think is actually sort of dying a little bit because of Instagram and social media and things like that. I think it's sort of dying. But it's a craft, and I think it's important for people to do it. Being on a show, I like to be on a show where not everything falls on me. You know what I'm saying? That's the type of show I like to be in. I like to act on a show or a film or something like that where not everything relies on me. Like, I like to be a bit part guy. Like, that would be nice. Like, so I don't have, like, a thing. But I can tell you a funny Norm Macdonald story if you want to hear it.
I do.
You guys know who Norm Macdonald is? Yes? Okay. I met Norm Macdonald a couple of years ago, obviously, before he died. And I met him in Las Vegas. And he was gambling or something. He was a big gambler, Norm Macdonald. Said one of the funniest things I've ever heard to me is that he came into the green room. I was with Jim Brewer, so he knows Jim, and he came in to meet Jim, and he said hi to Jim. And then he said to me, he goes, "Hey Brian, where are you from?" And I said, "Long Island is where I'm from." And he goes, and he paused, and Norm Macdonald goes, "Long Island?" He goes, "Brewer, aren't you from Long Island?" And he goes, "Yeah." And Norm Macdonald goes, "You Long Island guys are weird. You guys all hang out with each other." And it was like such a perfect, if you know Norm Macdonald, that's his sense of humor of, like, he picked out the thing that I thought would bring us together, and he's like, "That's the weirdest thing I've ever seen." So it was very nice. It was honestly, being made fun of by him was such an honor. You know, so I always appreciate it.
You got one more?
Yeah, have you ever felt like you wanted to say things, or you just felt stifled, like you couldn't say anything anywhere, in a family situation, work, stand up, anywhere, and how did you respond?
No, I unfortunately, this is probably why I don't have a lot of friends, is that I kind of say whatever I want, which is not a good way to live life, I can be honest with you, because you people can't handle the truth, the kind of blunt kind of truth. So no, I'm kind of somebody who doesn't hold it in, and if I do hold it in, my wife hears it when I get home. So she's an angel for listening to me complain the amount that I've complained about things. No, so I don't. There's never been a moment, even with family, especially with family. That's why a few of us don't talk. I have six brothers and sisters. I'm like, I don't need all of them. So I've never had that. I don't know if you guys have ever had that experience, but I don't really hold back. It's also, life's too short to hold back. So like, what are you holding back? I go, there's like 17 wars going on. The internet's going to take everything. It's just, who cares? Just say whatever you want.
You're lucky. Can't say the same.
So we're at social media time. So where can people find out more about you? TikTok, or you have the TikTok dances? You do any of that stuff? Or Instagram? What do you got?
You can follow me on Instagram at I am Brian McKenna. It's the only thing this comedy business cares about is that. I'm on Facebook and stuff. I have a funny feeling just by looking at the audience. You guys don't know anything I'm talking about. It's totally fine. I understand. If you have those things, you can follow me on those things. And you know, if you guys ever want to come to a show, you guys have seen me, you can always send me a message, and I no problem giving you guys free tickets. Don't tell the comedy club, but just send me a message on there, and I can always get you guys tickets.
So speaking of free tickets, you were kind enough to give away two free tickets to somebody in our live studio audience.
Oh, is that a raffle? Yeah. You guys all showed up for the raffle. I see what's going on here. Okay.
All right, does everybody have a raffle ticket? Make sure everybody has one before I do this. Everybody has one, everybody has one. Good. So, Brian, you're going to give away that and a signed autograph, right? That's a
sure.
picture.
Sure.
So, pick out the number.
Okay.
See what we got. The winner, what's the number?
371066. 371066. Yeah. Is it you? Is it you? Hilarious. That's so funny.
Well, if I give it to somebody else, that's okay.
Yeah.
Wow, they don't want it.
Well, no. I know John. They know John for a very long time, and he comes to the. He already gets free tickets to the comedy club. So that's a little bit cheating if I would give it to his wife. So.
All right. Second chance prize.
Sure. All right. 371059.
059.
John, if it's you.
There we go. Somebody,
there we go. Free tickets. I'm like Oprah. Everyone's getting
it. So as always, we always have tons of stuff at the East Metal Public Library. That's www.eastmetal.info. Every live show, which is the second Wednesday every month. Our next show will be Wednesday, May 8th. We will have producer and author Jerry Carretera. Can you pronounce that?
Carita?
He'll be giving away a book, so guys, make sure you go check that out. So we're almost out of time, so if you have any final thoughts for our live studio audience?
I have no real final thoughts. Thank you guys for coming. I appreciate you guys listening to me. I hope this was not as boring as in my head I feel like it was, because every time I talk, I kind of heard that. I hope it was entertaining for you guys, and you guys had a few laughs, and hopefully I'll see you guys again.
So that about does this week on the Campfire Radio. Join us every week and on our radio station. If you miss any part of the show, go to www.campfireradio.com. Listen to the archives. We'll be up any week or so. I want to thank you once again for being part of the live studio audience.
You've been listening to It Came From the Radio with Mark Torres. The views of the show's hosts and guests did not necessarily reflect that of the management, owners, or staff of the station. We now return you to your earthly scheduled broadcast.